Hello and welcome to The Late Debate with me, Audrey Carville. Coming up between now and 11, are we taxing our way to recovery or are tax cuts on the way?
Those local authorities where the property tax is high, where the income to the local authority is high, that they will be able to reduce the property tax by up to 15%.
And we'll have the latest on the floods in County Cork. All to come on The Late Debate after the news. It's read now by Eileen Whelan.
Good evening. The south and east of the country have been affected by gale force winds and torrential rain. Flooding has occurred in a number of counties, including Cork, Waterford and Wexford. Cork City flooded after the River Lee overflowed its banks before high tide tonight. Geraldine Harney reports.
While Cork was on high alert all day, people's worst fears didn't come to pass. High tide came shortly after 8 o'clock this evening when the River Lee broke its banks. Within minutes, Father Matthew Key and all of the surrounding areas were flooded. But unlike earlier in the week, the preparations put in by traders, homeowners and the city council paid off. While there was some flood damage, it was nothing as bad as people had anticipated and the waters are now slowly receding. Elsewhere in Cork, there was spot flooding in Cove, Clanachilty, Youghal and Bandon. Geraldine Harney, RT News, Cork.
Gardaí are advising motorists not to travel unless it's necessary as high winds and heavy rain are making driving conditions hazardous. There are reports of fallen trees blocking roads around the country. ESB Network says 19,000 customers are without power, mainly in the southwest of the country. Meanwhile, Irish Ferries has cancelled a number of sailings from Rosslare to Pembroke. Intending passengers are advised to check the company's website for updates. In other news, AIB is to write off debt immediately for distressed borrowers who the bank selects for split mortgages. The new initiative has been approved by the central bank and will begin in the coming weeks. The bank has declined to comment. It's the first of the main banks to tackle the mortgage arrears crisis in this way. In addition to having some debt written off at the beginning of the new arrangement, borrowers will also have some of the warehoused portion of the loan written off if they stick with the split mortgage repayment schedule. Existing split mortgages will be offered to in the new arrangement.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Liberty Insurance. Forecasting great value home insurance.
Extremely windy or stormy in places with heavy rain clearing northwards. Showers will follow with some prolonged or thundery in places overnight. Winds will moderate, especially in southern and southwestern counties later. Flooding is expected too, especially along the south and east coasts at high tide. Lowest temperatures 2 to 5 degrees. There's a warning of southeast to east gales or strong gales tonight on all coasts of Ireland and on the Irish Sea, reaching storm force 10 on coasts from Cairnsore Point to Roches Point to Valentia. Very showery tomorrow with occasional heavy rain, prolonged and sometimes thundery showers at times. And that's all for now. We'll have news again at 11, but now it's back to Audrey and The Late Debate.
Eileen, thank you very much indeed. You're very welcome back to the programme. In a few minutes we'll be discussing how much tax we pay in this country and if tax cuts are a realistic prospect in the next budget or if any such talk at the moment is purely electioneering. First though, we're going to Cork City to hear about the devastating floods. It was high tide there just over an hour ago. RTE's John Creedon, whom you heard just before us at 10, joins us from the RTE studio in the city centre. We're also joined by Morning Ireland reporter Justin McCarthy, who is in Oliver Plunkett Street in the city centre as well. Justin, just describe what you have seen in Cork City over the last number of hours.
Well, Audrey, I suppose about an hour and a half ago, Oliver Plunkett Street was clear and the traders were standing there in their doorways with sandbags and flood defences up. And they were looking earnestly towards the River Lee direction. And within a few minutes, water started rising from the drains. And that's always the first sign that something is going to happen here on Oliver Plunkett Street. And within about 10 minutes after that, water started cascading. The River Lee versus its banks, water cascaded down across South Mall and into the main commercial centre of Cork here on Oliver Plunkett Street. And at the moment, as I look up the street, it's completely flooded from one end right up to the other. And at its highest point in the middle, you're talking about it being about waist high in water. I don't think any of the shops that are in that the centre part of the street have survived in terms of their flood defences. And now traders are just resigned to the fact that they are going to have to engage in a clean-out operation. Their flood defences haven't worked in the centre part of the street. And it is pretty bad. It is about 2 feet of water, I would say, in the middle of Oliver Plunkett Street.
And Justin, was it as bad as the people there feared it would be, because they had been receiving warnings over the last 36 hours that tonight was going to be the worst?
Yeah, well, I was talking to a couple of traders and they said that certainly in the middle of Oliver Plunkett Street, run by the GPO in Cork City, the traders there told me that it was the worst flooding that they had seen in about 30 years. So it was, you know, the one thing they were thankful for was that they got ample warning this time and they were able to get their stock above ground level and were able to clear the main trading part of their floor away. I spoke to a couple of traders, a clothes shop and a pharmacist, and they were all able to get their stock up. So they were thankful for that they had the warning. But the situation is quite bad. And, right in the centre of Cork, from Oliver Plunkett Street right out to Patrick Street, it's a no-go zone. And Gardaí have actually closed off the city centre at the moment. So there's no traffic and certainly no pedestrian could get in even if they wanted to.
And presumably, or is it the case, Justin, that the traders, the business people, can't get into their premises to do much clear up at all until the waters subside?
Well, most of them, Audrey, came to their premises, stayed in their premises after close of business today, knowing that they would have to make preparations. So many of them are helping each other out in terms of, you know, they're moving stock around the shop as the water comes in. So many of them are here standing in doorways, kind of helplessly, really looking on quite helplessly. There's nothing they can do at this stage except wait for the water to recede now. And that's starting to happen. Up to about 20 minutes ago, the water was still coming over the side of the quays and flooding into the city centre. But I think that has started to recede now as we've reached kind of a peak high tide period.
Okay. Justin, thank you very much indeed. And you can hear Justin's report from Cork City on Morning Ireland from 7 tomorrow. John Creedon, John, you were tweeting pictures of the view from the RTE studio in the city centre throughout the evening. Can you just describe what you witnessed?
Well, the RTE studios in Cork are on Father Matthew Quay. It's one of the most low-lying parts of the city. That said, the building has withstood floods in the past. And there's a garage area that has taken in water in the past, but I was assured that it was safe to come to work today, and I got in particularly early. The view from the office window was, I would say that the flooding was premature in many ways. A lot of people were looking at the high tide mark, but by 8 o'clock, in fact, before 8 o'clock, the banks of the south channel of the Lee had started to be breached and there was water pouring in there at that stage. I was very surprised to see at the high tide mark. I just went to check again and I tweeted a photograph or two, but lo and behold, I actually saw kayakers sailing past the window here at around 9:15, 9:20. So despite all the warnings, it would appear that some people insisted on getting out and getting wet. And there are photographs being tweeted there of people on Patrick Street and so on, for one reason or another. But the only good thing I think about the traders, and Justin was pointing out there about Patrick Street is a real benchmark, because traders on Oliver Plunkett Street, which is also a very low-lying part of the city, to say they're used to flooding, well, they know it goes with the territory at a certain level. Patrick Street very rarely gets flooded. And this evening at least, it reached Patrick Street. And that is quite unusual. It has happened in the past. But Audrey, one of the things about Cork is that even by definition, the word Corkig literally means a marsh. It was a funny place to build a city in the first place. And as the city developed in the Middle Ages, the waterways were drained, the wetlands were drained, and many of the main streets in Cork today are former waterways. South Mall, for example, you'll still find that the front door of many of the buildings on the South Mall are actually on the first floor, because back as far as the 16, 17, 1800s, people knew that the area was prone to flooding. So it's just a terrible thing that people have had to live with, and this one was a particular surge. And I would say again, Audrey, that It was unusual insofar as all the elements seemed to conspire. You had the high tide, you had the heavy rain all day, and then you had that wind from the south pushing waves and so on up through the harbour and into the city.
And John, will you get home tonight? I mean, when will you get out of the building?
I'm going to take my time. I've had a quick chat here with my colleagues, and many of the streets around here are still flooded. So it is impassable for me for now, but it's receding very, very quickly. And you know, one of the things that struck me, Audrey, during the last flood that we had here a few weeks back, just before Christmas, was when the water is just 2 or 3 inches high on the footpath, if you step down onto the road, you're adding another 7 or 8 inches perhaps to the depth of the water. But the water is quite often running as a tide or as a current. So were you to fall over in even 10 inches or 12 inches of water, you know, it's not just getting wet, you can actually get tumbled along. And the speed of the river there tonight was quite frightening, so it was surprising to see people get that close to it. I see that another former colleague of ours, Tom McSweeney, has been tweeting about flooding and some structural damage in and around the Bulman in Kinsale. Yep. And I was getting reports coming in as well from Waterford and other places saying that they were having a bad night there too.
Absolutely, and we're going to hear from the Bulman in just a minute. Well, safe home, John. You might get a lift on that kayak if it comes back past your window. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Audrey. And usually I listen to you in the car, so it's a pleasant change to talk to you.
Good stuff. Thanks, John. Take care. We can talk now to chemist John Minahan, who has a business on Oliver Plunkett Street in Cork. He's on the line now. John, how bad is the damage to your premises?
Well, I'm opposite the GPO as referred to in the earlier reports, and I suppose at the moment I'm under about 2 feet of water. You know, we had the defences up, we had the sandbags up, the floodgate up, and I suppose we restricted it at the initial surge, but we could only hold it back for so long, and it finally breached and came through. So we had the defences up, we had the stock removed, but we're under 2 feet of water, and we're just waiting for it to recede now so we can start a clean-up process.
And do you hope to do that at some point in the early hours of tomorrow morning?
Oh, yes, we'll have to. You know, we have to be ready to open tomorrow morning like the rest of our colleagues are on the street. And you just have to clean up anyway. You can't have the stagnant water around. So once it recedes, we'll take away the flood defences and literally work in reverse and start pushing the water back out. And then we'll start the clean-up process.
Is this something you're used to, John? Has this happened to you before?
Look, you're used to preparing for it, but normally your defences hold and you stop it. You wouldn't have it as bad as this. Like, you know, we're here a long time, over 50 years in business. Certainly in my experience, we had a bad one around 2004, and really nothing since then. Every other time we've held our defences. So this was bad. Yeah, this was very bad. They talk about 1963, 2004, and I think they'll talk about 2014 in the same vein. And this was bad tonight, really bad, even though we were prepared.
Yeah, could anything more have been done in terms of preparation, do you think?
Look, I don't think so, in fairness. You know, we had the warnings. You know, you learn from it. At least there was no traffic driving through it, which was a bonus, because that creates terrible difficulties with the wash it creates into business premises. At least the traffic restrictions worked from that regard. The city council delivered sandbags today. That didn't go as well as planned, and I'm sure they'll learn from that and improve upon that. And the early warnings are great, because we, the traders, we just respond to it and we do what we have to do. So, look, you know, unless you're talking about the much bigger issue of national flood defences and things like that, which is a bigger debate. But, you know, we're resilient and we'll bounce back from this again.
Are you insured? Have you been able to get insurance for your business where you are?
No, I was insured for a number of years, but I suppose about 10 years ago, insurance started to change quite dramatically. In the insurance industry started zoning areas. And the initial thing was that your policy, you carried a huge excess, maybe up to 20,000. So the policy became like that. And then that excess was finally removed and there's just no insurance available. You just can't get it.
Okay, John.
So you have to put up. But thankfully, from my perspective, look, I didn't lose stock. We had our system in place and we saved stock. So we have damage, but we'll recover from that.
Yeah, it's all relative. Look, John, we wish you well with the cleanup and hope you're back in business soon. Thank you very much indeed. John Minahan there joining us live from Cork City. And we can go now to Summer Cove, which is near Kinsale, and talk to Piers O'Sullivan, who owns the Bullman Bar, which John Creedon mentioned there a few minutes ago. And Piers, there were some
Hello, how are you? Very dramatic
events there this evening. Can you just tell us what happened?
Well, effectively what happened was we were aware that there was a high tide, obviously, at 9 o'clock, and we were very much right on the ocean here. So we had all our defences in place. The waves started really hitting the wall very, very hard and coming over the top of the building. And eventually the wall collapsed, which would be the harbour wall, hence then collapsing the road, which the road collapsed to the point where it's probably a foot from the front door of the pub at this stage.
So the road, is it effectively gone?
Well, mostly, yeah. Now, we had flood defences, so we didn't actually get any damage on the inside of the building, but there is no road really effectively in front of the pub, you know?
So, I mean, it obviously incredibly strong conditions, which would have led to the road disintegrating.
Huge tides, yeah. Knocking out the wall. There's a pump house on the edge of the car park that was absolutely blown to pieces. So huge, huge tides hitting the area, the whole Summer Cove area. And literally coming, I mean, it's a three-story building and it was coming over the top of the roof. So it was dramatic, to say the least.
And are there many people in your bar at the moment?
We actually emptied the bar because of, well, obviously for safety reasons. You couldn't come in the front door because that is where the waves were crashing into.
Okay.
So the sandbanks did their job. We had the guillotine system on the sides of the building, but actually the tarmac helped in a strange way. The tarmac pushed underneath the doors and stopped any water from coming in, which is, you know, fortunate, but unfortunate.
Exactly. And you think the worst is over for tonight?
The worst is over tonight. It's subsided. We haven't been flooded, so you know, we after hearing the other stories there from Cork City and everything, we're actually quite grateful that we haven't been worse hit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it could have been a lot worse. But
you just need to build a new road.
We just need a new road to get in the front door. So we might be closed for a little while, but we'll have to wait and see how quickly we can get the road back.
Absolutely.
Back built, because at the moment it's kind of dangerous and very inaccessible, you know.
Well, look, Piers, we appreciate you talking to us. Thank you very much indeed. That's Piers O'Sullivan there.
My pleasure.
And he owns the Bullman Bar in Summer Cove near Kinsale. His business not affected, but the harbour wall and the road in front of his bar completely collapsed. We have with us in studio tonight, by chance, Brian Hayes, Minister of State with responsibility for the Office of Public Works. You're here to talk about tax, but obviously your reaction to what you've heard, Minister.
Well, it's pretty grim. I think there was a high expectation that the flooding situation would develop in Cork City tonight. But I know not only has Cork been really badly hit tonight, but also along the south and southeast coast, a lot of communities have been very badly affected. The Cork situation is difficult because obviously you have a fluvial problem where you get significant amounts of rainfall added to high tides. And we've been working with Cork City Council. We're actually bringing forward a proposal as part of the Lee Seaframs. But I think the public don't understand the length of time it takes to get these proposals. I mean, you've got to be absolutely certain in the solutions you put forward before you spend a euro that the solution is actually going to actually hit the target. The model has to be right. The hydrological model has to be right so that you can get a proper solution that deals with the rainfall issue on one side and the tidal problem on the other. Then you also got to produce those solutions to the stakeholders. We often find people object for all kinds of reasons. How much of the land is owned privately? How much of it is owned publicly? You got to get the procurement right. But we're pretty confident that the solution for Cork City is going to be brought forward. And we think solutions will be out by the August period of this year, construction next year, but we're still some time away from it. When you consider the length of time it took to get the Kilkenny situation right, the Clonmel situation right, and here in Clonmel there's problems tonight as well, even where we spend that money, you know, 390 million in the last 10 years, what we're seeing at the moment, and I was interested to see this in Limerick yesterday, I mean, our defences kind of hit the international standard, which is you try to get a defence which hits the standard of 1 to 100 a year. But the problem in Limerick over the weekend, Audrey, was that this is way and beyond a 100-year event now. Mm-hmm. And that's going to affect all of the modelling that has to be put in place and the amounts one can spend and what you prioritise. When I first came to the OPW, I said, how many areas of the country are we talking about? And they said, well, Minister, it's about 250 areas, hotspots around the country. You know, if you were to sum up the total amount of money that would be involved in resolving on a capital basis all of that, you're talking about billions of euro. So we've got to prioritise the scarce resources we have to make sure that has maximum effect. And obviously that means people's homes, their businesses.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you in terms of the more immediate effect and impact and compensation, I suppose, is the word I'm looking for the people directly affected tonight. We heard there from one of them, John Minahan. For people like that who aren't insured, I mean, will they get access to some of this 15 million?
Well, the 15 million announcement that the government made today was in relation to humanitarian relief. And that's an existing scheme that is run by Joan Burton and her department. And it basically means for people who have no home to go to, or alternatively need to get the floorboards up quickly, or need to get some white goods in to get the cooker going again and all the rest of it. That's what that's for. It's okay. Not essentially for businesses per se. Where I was yesterday in Limerick City, in St. Mary's Park, which is in the King's Island area, an old area of the city, completely knocked out. I mean, 300 houses knocked out. And as we speak here this evening, I presume a lot of those people aren't in those homes because of the devastation that was caused. So the humanitarian relief has got to be to clean out the areas, to get the new floorboards in, to get the white goods in, so that we can start rebuilding those lives for those people in those areas.
And for the businesses who aren't insured, are they on their own?
They are on their own. There is very little protection given for businesses in this situation. And as John Minahan said, who was a former colleague of ours in the Shannon, yeah. Mm-hmm. He had insurance. He's lost it like every other shopkeeper and like every other business person there. We're working with the Insurance Federation that where we have put in a solution and we've put the capital investment in, that they would at the very least recognise that investment. For instance, in Dublin, in 2009, 65 million euros worth of damage was done as a result of the work to the Talca. In the most recent storm, there's only 100,000 euros worth of damage from 65 million to 100,000. Yeah. That shows the capital defences work. And it's really important that where we put that money in on behalf of the taxpayer, that the insurance industry understand that we have put in a solution. You're not going to get them insuring until we put the investment in. That's the reality of it, because there are PLCs, they come and go, quite frankly. This is an area that they're going to be whacked on, obviously. And even though general insurance, there will be some market there, it's going to be difficult to get those areas flooded or insured again. So what we need to do is obviously ramp up expenditure here. We will have a memo going to Cabinet next week on the initial assessment for the first week of this particular calendar year, where the Western counties were so badly affected. And we'll see if we can get the additional funding into those areas.
Okay. Well, look, more on this story, on the conditions in Cork and the rest of the country that's affected, on our bulletins throughout the night and Morning Ireland, coming live from Cork from 7 o'clock tomorrow morning. It's 23 minutes past 10. Brian Hayes obviously staying with us. Also joining me tonight to discuss whether or not we are taxing our way to recovery, if we're paying far too much tax, and if there's any realistic prospect of tax cuts in the next budget, our Sinn Féin's finance spokesman, Piers Doherty, financial journalist and columnist with the Sunday Times, Jill Kirby, and economist, Moira McDougall. You're all very welcome indeed. Jill, who pays too much tax in this country?
We all pay too much tax in this country. That's my personal view. I think it's a view shared by an awful lot of other people, given how the tax situation has changed since the collapse in 2008. There's still, I'm sure, some diehards who believe that we are undertaxed, that anybody who is lucky enough to have a job and is still functioning and has a beating pulse should be paying more tax. But I don't think that's the case. I think 5-6 years into this Great Recession, ordinary folk who, you know, felt that, yes, we have to make sacrifices and, yes, everybody has to dig deep and hope that we get the country out of it, are now realizing, gee, there's not a lot of relief for me after 5 or 6 years. If anything, it's getting worse. And it's getting worse because all that combination of not having pay rises over the last several years, most of us, I mean, some people are lucky enough to have had pay rises, but most people that I certainly know and speak to haven't. Their taxes have gone way up, not just their income taxes, but indirect taxes as well. They've been hit by levies. They've been hit by, higher VAT on everything that you sort of purchase as
and
well.
You do
and when
your,
you add all that
when you do your
up,
sums, what's the final total that you've come to?
Listen, we know what the income tax marginal rate is. It's 52% for everybody who earns over 32,800 euros now. That's ridiculous. For every extra euro, there's very little incentive to work too hard for that. I honestly don't know what it is. I wish I could work it out. I wish somebody could work it out for me exactly what it is when you add, and I've just done a very quick tot of the income tax at those levels, VAT at 23%, PRSI, the ceiling is gone, so it used to be up to 75,000, it's all gone, you pay it on everything. DIRT is up to 41% on your savings, what you get from an investment fund if you've been saving for your kids. You know, you put money into Irish Life or someplace, and at the end of that, that's 41% on the growth now. DIRT, as I said, is 41%. PRSI is from this year is now on unearned income, whether it's rental or rental income, dividends, again, things like savings. That's if you have over 3,000 euros in unearned income. Mortgage relief is gone for people. Landlords, of course, in the last several years can only claim 75% of their expenses and interest against their rental income. Mm-hmm. CGT,
capital gains tax,
inheritance tax has gone from 20% to 33%. And the amount, if you get an inheritance or the thresholds, have been halved. They were 500,000 between parents and children. Now they're about 225,000. Property tax has been introduced. Carbon taxes have been introduced. Water charges from this October for payment from next January. And my little favourite ones, which, you know, governments are very clever about doing, and these are the horrible levies. There's levies on pension savings, your actual wealth, your savings, not the growth in the fund, not the big pension insurance companies' profits, but mm-hmm. your actual savings. And I've been doing that for a long time. And insurance, 1% tax on all health insurance policies, 5% on motor and home insurance. And thank you, Mr. Quinn, for that one. That was because of the Quinn collapse, mm-hmm. the extra levies that were already there. More levies on that. And the one that's really affecting readers of mine and people who call into lots of RTE programs, and that is this incredible health levy to support the VHI, the government's own company, which is a basket case, really. I mean, it's offering a great service to people, but it's not even publicly owned. It's owned by the Department of Health. It's unregulated. Keeps missing all the deadlines it's been given by the Central Bank and the European Commission, and all that health levy money, which is, it's going up to 399 euros per adult, 125 euros for children. All that money goes to the VHI. So all of those, when you add that all up, I suspect we're probably 70, 75% probably of everything you earn goes to the government one way or another. Mm-hmm. And there's no reform of the extra costs that have happened too in these 5 years for the cost of education, health, transport costs, legal costs. None of that's been changed either, and they've all gotten more expensive.
Okay, well, you've laid out the picture there. Piers Doherty, do you agree that everyone in this country pays too much tax?
No, I don't agree at all. I think that there's very few people in the country that will be rushing to government buildings demanding that they should pay more tax. But the reality is that there are people in this state who can afford to pay more tax. And then it's my view there are people in this state who are paying too much tax. And when we talk about tax, we have to then define what we're talking about. We sometimes have this conversation just as income tax, but then we have the indirect taxes. So Sinn Féin are very clear. We would actually get rid of some taxes. We've committed to abolishing the property tax if we got into government. We don't believe in terms of water charges coming in, which is another tax. There's other taxes that we'd want to modify, such as the universal social charge and bringing those minimum wage earners out of that net. But there's new taxes that we want to introduce. We want to make the income tax system more progressive, so introducing a third rate of tax on high income earners. Now, people, and Jill has mentioned earlier on that, the view is that Irish people pay too much tax and you're entering into the tax rate at 32 €32,000. But actually, if you look at the comparative data with other European OECD countries, you'll actually find that the actual tax that we pay, even at that level and the level that's been tested is €36,000, that we're below our European partners. And the data exists there. So you have to look at comparative detail. And, you know, I have the data here. For example, it's 21.2% that somebody earning €36,000 would actually pay in tax. That would be their social insurance, their income tax in USC. If you compare that with the average of Western European countries, it's actually 30.6. You know, and the details are all broken down. These are stats that come from the OECD. So when you look at the comparative detail, now, the headline income tax rate is high here, you know, comparative to others. But what is actually quite low is the social insurance. And that's the issue. And what I think a lot of people are annoyed about is actually where their money goes, where their tax dollar goes. So while you see other countries that are more progressive maybe charging more tax on individuals, what they get is a lot of services as a result of that. So if we have this debate, which has been opened up by Minister Hayes here and others about reducing income taxes for those at the higher end, you actually have to cut services, you know, and particularly it's those on the lower end that were more dependent on those services. So we would be, you know, you have to look at it's not a simple question of are we paying too much tax or should we tax more? There's some people we need to tax less and there's some people we need to tax more.
Do you agree, Moore McDougall?
Well, it's a political choice, but I don't agree with the view that the country is, you know, that there is room to sort our problems out by increasing particularly direct taxation. I'm not in favour of abolishing the property tax. Everybody who knows anything about the economics of taxation or public finance will know that, and virtually any economist you talk to is going to say that one of the biggest mistakes we ever made was back in 1977 in abolishing rates. Well, rates were a property tax. And what we actually did was we abolished domestic rates, thereby starving local authorities of funds. They now became dependent on central government, partly. Partly to recoup this, of course, they increased commercial rates, which made business more expensive. There are huge advantages, frankly, in replacing income tax or even sales taxes with some form of property taxation. And the most important one from an economics perspective is the incentive effect. In effect, I own a house that's worth €500,000. I know that next year I have to find whatever the tax rate is, and that's 300 or 400, 500, be a bit more, about €600. I have to do that. But if I earn more money, I keep it. We've unfortunately gone over to, while we seem to be going in that direction, we wanted to reduce direct taxation. We wanted to rely more on indirect taxation and on property taxation. And now, in the last couple of years, we've moved back in the opposite direction, particularly with the USC. I don't want to get into a debate about figures and so on with Pierce, but I will say that I disagree with his view that the income tax system in this country is not progressive enough.
So you wouldn't introduce a third rate of income tax for higher earners?
Whether you have three rates or two rates or five rates or seven rates really isn't the point. The point is, where does the marginal tax rate, where does the high marginal tax rate kick in? Mm-hmm. And while Pierce is right when he says, if you look at somebody on around mid-30s and you say, what would he or she be paying in France? Mm-hmm. You get something very close to what's being paid here. But the difference is that in France, it is social security. It's not income tax.
And it's also €186,000 before they start paying the top rate.
They're paying much higher property tax than they are here.
And they pay a property tax too.
I think you have to stand back from this in present circumstances. There are two issues. One is a political one. If I were advising the government, I'd be saying, be very careful about it's very tempting to start saying, look, there's light at the end of the tunnel and it ain't a train coming towards you. The light is that we'd be able to do something about taxation, maybe a bit here or a bit there. Frankly, the situation is much better than it was three or 6 months ago. The economy is growing. This is going to make life much easier for the government in terms of meeting its targets. But what that really means is that they won't have to cut as much and they won't have to increase taxes as much. But it doesn't really put them in a position where they can start cutting taxes.
Is that fair enough, Brian Hayes?
I think we have to be cautious about this. I mean, We still have a deficit. It's too high. We have to get it down. We have to continue to get a proper kilter between tax and expenditure. But I do think people need to see some light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, we went from a very regressive taxation system, in my view, to very quickly becoming a very progressive taxation system, largely because what happened was, for about a three-year period before 2008, broadly speaking, we were taking in $50 billion in tax every year, spending the same, a little bit less sometimes, and suddenly in 2008, it was knocked back to $34 billion. So $16 billion of a chasm opened up over 12 months. So it was inevitable in the first phase that the government had to hike up tax. Our view is, and remains, that the best way to try to keep unemployment as low as we possibly can in an environment in the middle of this crash is not to put further tax on work. Hmm. And
But you're not going to be in a position to cut taxes.
Well, I think even if we can do it in a small way, it will send an important signal psychologically, in confidence ways, that the end of this massive hike in tax is at an end, and we can slowly but surely begin to correct what is an imbalance. I mean, it is fundamentally wrong, in my view, that for every euro over 32,800 euro, that you're whacked on 52%, or 52 but if you're self-employed, it's actually more, 55. Whereas in Britain, the equivalent amount is 150,000 euro. Mm-hmm. Now, that is the issue. The British Labour Party is
talking 183,000
in equivalent 183,000 euros.
Euro. Yeah.
The point I would make is that, you know, even the British Labour Party are now talking about a new 50p rate, but only for people over 150,000. So I believe this is an issue we've got to address. We can't tax our way out of this recession, but at the same time, we do need a stable form of taxation. We have to broaden the tax base. We've done that. Property taxes, capital taxes have all gone up, as we all know. We've seen rises in indirect taxes from 21 to 23%. That's hitting people. But if you're trying to have an economy where you're maximising jobs and keeping people at work, the least harmful thing to do, in my view, is to continually hike up tax on work. Mm-hmm. And
but are you seriously? Are you seriously?
Yes, sorry, the most harmful thing to do. Yeah.
Are you seriously considering income tax cuts in the next budget?
Well, it's too early to say. But if there is any opportunity, I think even in a small way, to demonstrate to the public that we're going back in the direction of, I think, a more progressive system, I think we should be able to do that.
I'm worried about this, Brian, from the following perspective. We have, the government has a target to reach a deficit of 3% by 2016. And everybody says, oh gosh, that sorts that problem out. Actually, the target, the true target, the long-term target is zero. Mm-hmm. And not only is the long-term target zero, meaning that we still have a long way to go in terms of getting the public finances right, which means either taxing or spending cuts. But on top of that, because sorting out the fiscal problem is one thing, but the overhang of debt which we've inherited from the wretched banks means that in order to deal with the situation we're in, if we didn't borrow another penny, and we still are borrowing, if we didn't borrow another penny, we would find ourselves having to run a surplus on the budget of 4 or 5% of GDP simply to service the debts we've incurred.
It's about 10 billion,
so,
11 billion.
You know,
though,
this is what economists talk about, structural budgets. They talk about the primary surplus and people just glaze over. Mm-hmm. But it's a very simple thing. We have this enormous debt burden, which has to be financed out of tax. So meeting the target set by the Troika and the EU is a good thing, but it's only halfway down the road. And when we get to the end of the road, it's not going to provide bundles of lula which can be spent on the social service or anything like this.
No one's saying that.
We really are in hock. And this, you know, bringing in another issue here, this is why, whether they succeed or not, it is desperately important to get relief on the legacy debts. Mm-hmm. And I mean, my blood pressure goes up when I hear the Bundesbank in Germany now saying, well, actually, at the time, we agreed you shouldn't have had to pay it. Mm-hmm. They did bloody damn all about it at the time. And they say, oh, well, it's all that Frenchman Trichet. And of course, we can all cheer and say, oh, that's the French again looking after their own banks. Maybe true. But this government, or any successor government, if it wants to get the public finances right and simultaneously to get taxes back to even to a general level of Europe, let alone what I would prefer to see, a lower level of taxation than most of the other countries in the EU. If it's got to do that, it has to get relief. And okay. I don't know whether they're going to succeed, but that is the huge cliche, elephant in the living room.
You all want in. Minister, just respond directly to that.
Don't disagree with anything Moore said. I mean, there is a legacy issue that remains, and the government is very conscious of that. As Michael Noonan has consistently said, this is a marathon, not a sprint. And I think we should only be judged on what we've done in the last 3 years. People said we wouldn't get any negotiation on the promissory note issue. That has been, broadly speaking, resolved. People said we wouldn't get the deal that would apply in terms of the maturities and the interest rate. We have made, I think, a very good start in those areas. And we know exactly what has to be done on this particular issue. And we will continue to negotiate that. And that requires a patient negotiation on the part of the government, but at the same time, there needs to be an understanding of the difficulties that remain in other countries. Now, I think we would have been in a very poor position, Moore, had the whole question of retroactive support for our banks been taken off the agenda, not part of the manual, never accepted. But it will have to be an issue that is addressed in the context of where banking union falls, and we all accept that.
I want to come back to tax. Chris and Claire has texted to say, I recently received a promotion and a decent wage increase. I lost 71% of it in deductions, 71% in PAYE, USC, pension contribution, pension levy, and VHI, another tax in reality. What's the point? Jill.
Yeah, I think that your colour is absolutely spot on. And this, moving the discussion towards the amount of debt is very, very relevant for so many people. We've seen in each quarter the amount of arrears rising in house, mortgage arrears are rising. And I'll show you the figures, Brian. You're looking at me sceptically here. Up to the last quarter in the end of 2013. And an interesting survey last week showed that something like 65%, about three quarters or two thirds rather, of the people who are in arrears are actually working. I mean, it's not all just the unemployed who can't pay their mortgages. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they can't pay their mortgages is because of all the things I said at the beginning. They haven't had any decent increase in their income, and their taxes have gone up, and other costs, mm-hmm. Many of them, prompted by inefficiencies in the state services.
The tax expert has tweeted a question to you, Jill, that do you think that the tax on low earners would be lower if there was a wealth tax to offset it?
Yeah, I think that's, and I know that's something that I've heard you speak many times about, and I think we could probably look at that idea, not of necessarily a wealth tax, but how the very, very wealthy aren't just taxed, but how they get away with not paying tax and all the deductions and everything else that's involved. And I'd also like to think, from a practical point of view, that surely the time has come to start looking at the amount, and this, because that would make a huge impact, look at the amount that the big foreign companies and really big industries in this country, they're paying an effective rate of, what, about 2.5%, even though we have a very reasonable 12.5% corporate rate. And I think trying to figure out how to get some more tax out of them, because it would be a huge impact. I mean, these guys make huge profits. And instead of slapping a 60% tax rate on people who earn over 100,000 euros, who are already at least giving away 40% of that. And when you've got a family and you've worked for 25 or 30 years and you now have disposable income of 60 grand, divide that by 12 months, you're in 5 grand a month territory. And that's not a lot of money. I mean, ordinary people out there can say 5,000 would be very nice, but that's not a fortune. 100,000 isn't a fortune anymore, not in this country where costs are high, services are very poor for the tax that we pay.
Okay, let me bring Pearson at this point.
Yeah, well, 80% of households are, like, the average income for up to the 80% is 56,000 euros. So for most people, when we're talking about 100,000, we're talking about you know, it's dream money for a lot of people that are listening
but
to this program.
But a gardener who are both experienced with 25 years service, those people are making 70, 80, 90,000 years. Making 100's not a lot more.
I'm not denying that that type of money exists, but what I'm saying to you is that the vast majority of people listening to this program, that that's money that they will only dream about in terms of having
you
as an income.
Dream of that, for goodness sake.
It's not actually true, Pierce.
What percentage of the people are earning above 100,000 euros?
Wait a second. Okay, I can show you that directly. Yeah. It would be based on the statistics from the revenue commissioners, the last ones they have, it's been published for 2010. I don't know how they've made it. Over 100,000, approximately. But the percentage of the population would be maybe about 4% are earning over 100,000.
But that's exactly my point. Sorry, I just didn't answer
that. Just let Pierce finish his point, and then I'll come back to you. Haven't heard from Pierce in a few minutes.
There is something you've got to remember. Okay. When you look at, think about the life cycle of a family. Mm. And you see people who are, if you don't take that into account, you look at, I'm only earning 32,000, but I'm only 32. Now, most people have a life cycle in their income. So if you look at it that way, when you say people can't dream of getting much more than 32,000, actually, that's not true.
I never said that. Sorry, thanks for the lesson, but thanks for the lecture.
No, excuse me.
But I didn't say 32,000 euro.
Okay, well, whatever.
I said 100,000 euro.
Well, whatever. Okay, 100,000 they may find difficult to get.
Well, thanks for agreeing with me. Now,
You're very unlikely to be in the top 4%.
Yes, but when that's you take my point.
But when you take into account that people do earn more as they go into their 30s, 40s, 50s, and then it falls after. Like mine is half what it was when I was working in UCD. But that's part of the narrative. So I'm relatively poor now, but I accumulated savings. So, you know, when you look at these income distribution figures, you're taking a flash photograph. And that doesn't necessarily give you a true picture of what the lifetime income of any individual in society is. And therefore, it's very dangerous to say, because so many people are in this bracket or so many people are in that bracket, we've got to do something.
Okay, thanks a million for the lecture on figures that I never actually mentioned. But you agree with me that the vast majority of people do not earn over 100,000 euro. And is for many people, It is a figure that they only dream about. And I understand the whole lifetime cycle and people will hopefully enter that area, but only a certain amount of people will enter that. And at any time, given time, there's only 4%, as you say yourself. The point about when we have this conversation about tax, and we can throw out figures to beat the band and we can start debating figures and showing other figures. When you look at taxation, you have to look at the tax, which we are all talking about, the income tax, but you also have to include social insurance. Because that's what people agree. And it is beyond doubt that social insurance in this state is way below European averages. So when you take social insurance there's also a reason why we have such a bad public services, because we're not paying enough social insurance. So what do we do? How do we ask people, or who do we ask people to pay? Well, it's Jill, it's like
that's
this here.
That's not the reason why we have lousy public service, because they're badly run, they're badly managed. Look at the bloody health
service.
It's like
the HSE.
Just one voice, please, Pierce, finish the point.
If you have to reduce a deficit, as we've been trying to do for the last 6 years, you have to look at a number of areas. This government have decided on two areas, which is cuts or tax increases, which the majority has fallen in cuts, 20 billion over the last 6 years. They haven't looked at stimulus at all, which I think was a big flaw, which Sinn Féin would argue for the third leg of the stool. But what we do and what the government have done, and we see it in terms of the health services, is cuts to the health service, cuts to social welfare services, cuts to different services. We're not building the necessary flood barriers, and we talked about that earlier on, because it costs too much money. If we do not increase the type of taxation that we have coming into the state, then we can't provide the services that need to be there.
Okay.
We need to eliminate waste, yes, but to argue that this can all be done on the type of budget that we're providing in terms of our public service is simply, I think, a myth, and it's not possible.
I suppose the difference, I mean, I agree with the stimulus, but I think the best way to have a stimulus is to put more money back in people's pockets because they spend it. Mm. And I don't think you're going to do that by the kind of Sinn Féin model of continually putting more and more taxes on people. I think it's really important that people hear that we are at the end of this this crisis, and they need to see some light at the end of the tunnel.
I didn't interrupt you.
You said that social insurance is one of the lowest by comparison to other EU countries. Yeah. That is not the case, Piers. The Social Insurance Fund, which was set up in the 1950s, which actually pays for pensions ultimately, was in surplus up until recently. It's only become in deficit because of the large number of people who've had to draw down benefits because they've been unemployed. The best way to ensure that we get that back into surplus is to get people back to work. You don't do that by taxing the hell out of them, which is the Sinn Féin approach in this. And I would make this other point. The top 10%, we know this not just from the revenue, but the top 10% of all income earners contribute 60% of all tax. The people at the top are paying the big whack of this, rightly so, because they're the people with the broadest shoulders. But this notion that the rich aren't making a contribution, which is kind of fine and dandy and populist and all the rest of it, it doesn't actually align itself with the facts. Now, take the...
Nobody said that, Brian. I think it's really important, if we're going to come out to a studio, that we actually have a debate that's based on fact. I never said that the rich aren't making a contribution. I said that I believe that they have a capacity to make a greater contribution because they have more disposable income. The other thing you said is, that, for example, is that Sinn Féin want to tax the hell out of people. You know, because I know that you do know as Junior Minister for Finance, our position, you know that we haven't proposed a tax increase on any individual earning less than €100,000. You know actually that we would actually reduce their tax by abolishing the property tax, by taking minimum wage earners out of the USC net. You know that because I assume you've read our alternative budget, which is talked about. When you talk about whacking the hell out of people with additional taxation, we're talking about...
So can I just make this point and then we'll let the experts back in again. You see, the reason why I don't think you're credible on this, Pearson, I have read your stuff inside out and it doesn't stack up because you don't tell the truth to the people. You're going to get rid of property tax. You're going to reform USE, whatever that means. You're going to also... You're also going to reduce from 23 to 21% the VAT, which we had to hike up. And you're going to do all that while having a wealth tax on one hand and suddenly, manana, our problems are solved. No one believes it, Pierce.
Well, can I just say this here? Like, it's really disingenuous for you because you know this and you're basically just trumping this out here to try and hope that the listeners believe you. You know fine well our pre-budget submission didn't call for a reduction in VAT to 21%. Either that or you're just ignorant or haven't read the thing.
No, I have read it.
The detail.
So the commitment you gave the previous year doesn't hold.
The second thing is you know that the second thing you say when it doesn't add up, despite the promise given, when you say it doesn't add up, can I say that it's your own Minister for Finance, Michael Noonan, that put all of these costings on the public record and your own department and
based on your assumptions, Pierce.
Maybe you're in election mode, but like, if we really want to have a proper debate as to how we move into paying our fair way in society and building the public services that we require, then we should have a debate based on some honesty rather than this kind of populist nonsense that you come out with.
You know, I've got to tackle Pierce on this. The public services we need, the things we have to have, and in order to do this, we have to increase taxation. That's a perfectly legitimate point of view. You name it what it is that you want to have in terms of social services and the rest of it. But if somebody puts up his hand timidly and says, but I don't think we can actually afford it because we don't want to pay those taxes, then I think you have to recognise that. And the difficulty here is that, in a sense, there is a disconnect between what people on the left of the political spectrum, such as Pearson's party, want in terms of more public expenditure and the political realities that people don't want to pay the kind of taxes that are required to do it. Now, whether they do it, that's a political issue. And I can blather on as an economist about this or that, but that is fundamentally a political issue. And if they vote for Sinn Féin and they put Sinn Féin in, carry on, do it if you want to do it. But to pretend that you can have the kind of social programme that Sinn Féin would like to put in, while not having the kind of high taxes that it implies, is just nonsense. And if people don't want to accept the high taxes, and I think that that is perfectly clear, then Sinn Féin is going to have to recognise that reality and trim its sails accordingly.
Yeah, but I think what people are really angry is the waste. And that's where it is. What they do not want to see is when they're paying 52% on the extra euro that they earn above the 32,000 euro, is they don't want to see it going into the pockets of consultants in Irish Water. What people, in my view, are willing to do is they're willing to pay additional taxes at the higher end so that they can ensure that their loved one gets treated in hospitals.
They're willing
that they're
to get other people to pay taxes. They're very unwilling to pay taxes themselves. Well, there's no problem going out and saying, I'm proposing to a social programme and I'm going to finance it by taxing somebody else. And you're going to get a vote. Certainly, that's a grand idea. I'm going to get more goodies and somebody else is going to pay for it. And if you make these, in your programme, you sort of look at the rich and the rich are going to pay for it. Well, whether they do or they don't, because they can always emigrate, but whether they do or they don't, what you're really saying is, look, we want more social spending or we want more flood defences or whatever else it is, but you don't have to worry because somebody else is going to pay the tax.
Okay, Jill Kirby.
I think people should recognise around this table that there are two new sets of the middle class, if you wish, and they're called debt serfs and they're called tax serfs. And that's what's happened, really. You know, they've cut back. The debt serfs are the people who have mortgages that they can't really afford, sometimes in arrears, and they've got this burden of tax if they're still working. The debt serfs are people like Maura and me, who, you know, are older people who don't have debt because we paid it off. We didn't get into debt. And we used our salaries, which grew over the years, prudently. But now we're tax serfs. We're not debt serfs, but we're tax serfs. And adding to that burden means that the message is getting out very clearly to their children and to my own child as well. And that is that if you stay here in this country with the level of debt, both the government level of debt, which has just soared to over 200 billion in 6 years, and to the 170 billion of debt that soared in households, then you are going to be servicing those costs for the rest of your lives as well. And that is why, I mean, that was a fascinating survey done by the University of Cork last year as well, which showed again about, about two-thirds of the young graduates who are leaving jobs. They're not just leaving the country. Mm-hmm. They're leaving the jobs that they have here. And why is that? Because they know that's going to happen.
But that's why the only way forward for the country in getting that debt mountain down personally and equally
is
to get people back to work, yeah. Exactly, and get the economy growing. We all know that. And I think one of the reasons why I just find Pearce's argument just not credible is on the question of broadening the tax base, the reason why this country got into the hock it was in was because the tax base was far too narrow, quite frankly. We need to broaden the tax base so that we can continue to have work as an attractive thing. And that was the real problem. That is the real problem. When you had a construction industry at 20% of GDP, the state, you know, getting all of the income on the VAT side and all of the side from that. That's why we need to have a broadening of the tax base. That's why I think
that we were the only party not to advocate for the lowering of stamp duty at the time when you were trying to ramp up the property industry when it was falling. You'll also be mindful that we were the only party that didn't argue for a reduction in the higher rate of VAT, because we actually argued at that time that you should not be reducing taxes to that level.
And that's Minister Tommy Wicklow has texted to say that, what do you mean when you say you're not taxing work? Because he says,
we're taxing work too high.
Yeah, but he says, do you think that the money he pays his property tax with grows on trees and the rest of the money he works for when he puts up indirect taxes, it is tax on his work?
So no, the argument I'm making to that gentleman is that our unemployment is far too high. And one of the reasons, in my view, why we've managed to see quite a reduction in unemployment in the last 12 months, especially with the 60,000 net new jobs, is because the government has made a very clear decision that we're not going to increase tax on work. That's the best way to try to get people back to work. It's the best way to get the economy growing and that people can actually see a prosperous society. That is the only way forward as far as we've been through this argument internationally. All the evidence shows that if you're continually taxing people, you're not going to get people back to work. And I recognise the fact that there's been more and more taxes on the indirect side, on the capital side.
You've starved the domestic economy of the resources it required. That is why every single growth target that you and the Department of Finance have set down has been missed. Yeah. As a result of your plan. For 6 years, the plan was that the economy would grow 3 years in 2 years' time, 2 years this year and so on, and it never actually grew, but you've continued with that.
Pierce, the only difference between, when you say starving, the only difference is this. We either faced a reality of cutting 28.5 billion in 1 year or we did it over 4 or 5 or 6 years. That's the reality. We actually, in a funny way, have had our stimulus plan.
There's actually, oh, well, God, for God Almighty, if that's the stimulus plan, then, you know, I wouldn't want to see, you know, without a stimulus plan. But the thing, it's not about how much you had to cut from the economy. It's about how you cut it. And what the problem was that the government has introduced regressive taxation budgets, and they've been looked at your own budgets from the ESRI, which said that they've been regressive.
And over 5 years.
But yeah, well, look, if you want to hang on the coattails of Fianna Fáil, then go ahead. But your own budgets have been regressive because you have decided to take more from the...
Okay. The only way forward...
My last point, the
only way forward... Why is it the case that 60,000 net new jobs have been created? Why is the business sentiment is better than it's been for the last 6 years because we're getting out of this, because of the policies adopted, which is unlike Sinn Féin, which would continually tax more and more people.
Thank you all very much indeed for taking part. We're back at 10 o'clock tomorrow night. Until then, good night. The Late Debate, presented by Audrey Carvel, was produced by Donal O'Herlihy. The broadcast coordinator was Maeve Mooney. The researcher, Richie Byrne. And sound supervision tonight was by Bryony October.